From Radio Catskill Studios in Liberty, New York, this is the Local Edition. And I'm Jason Dole. Thank you so much for being here with me tonight. Coming up, the Church of the Little Green Man in Glen Wild is celebrating 40 years next weekend. Teresa Arroyo talks with artist Mike Osterhout coming up in the second half of the program. We also continue our coverage of New York State's budget, which finally passed last week after the longest delay of any New York State budget in the last decade. Reporters from New York Focus join us to explore how this budget changes New York's landmark climate change law. We start right now with news from Ulster County, where the start of Pride Month was marked with the raising of a flag. Ulster County Executive Jen Metzger, local officials, and community leaders raised the Pride flag in Kingston yesterday, kicking off Pride Month. Metzger took the opportunity to point out that although the start of Pride Month is a special occasion, the raising of this flag is nothing new in Ulster.
We are doing a Pride flag raising today, but we actually keep our Pride flag up year-round because we do this ceremoniously. But it is not just a day or a month. It is an expression of who we are as a county. It's an expression of what we believe in, that everyone should feel safe, should be able to thrive, should not have to worry that they're being discriminated against.
Kimberly Izar was there in Kingston yesterday for that flag raising, bringing us that audio. You can catch her full report on Radio Chatskill with Tim Bruno tomorrow morning at 10. In Albany, New York Democrats, the party in power in the state's capital, they say the gloves are off for drawing new congressional districts. WNYC's Jimmy Vielkind reports.
State Assembly Speaker Carl Hastie says he wants a range of options for drawing a new congressional map in the state. The Bronx Democrat wants to amend the state constitution to allow a new map in time for the 2028 elections. The amendment would also repeal New York's ban on partisan gerrymandering. Hastie says it's justified by what Republicans are doing in other states.
I'm concerned about Republicans trying to wipe out black members of Congress. I'm concerned about a lot of things, but I think this thing about asking New York to play fair while everybody else is, you know, is playing ruthless, I think it's not right to ask us to do that.
Republicans say the amendment is a power grab. They'll urge voters to reject it in 2027. In Albany, I'm Jimmy Vielkind for the New York Public News Network.
After her current term representing New York's 21st congressional district ends, Elise Stefanik will be stepping down. The Republican candidates running for their party's nomination to replace her are trading barbs now as early voting approaches. The 21st district stretches from the northern Catskills all the way to the Canadian border, believe it or not, incorporating most of the Adirondacks. New York Public News Network's Aaron Shello-Levine reports.
Ahead of a planned candidate forum last week with New York State Assemblyman Robert Smullen, it wasn't clear if his opponent, Amsterdam businessman Anthony Constantino, would show. And at the end of the event that morphed into a contentious debate, Smullen declined to shake Constantino's hand. As he seeks the seat held by Republican Elise Stefanik, Smullen continued his attacks against anti-establishment Constantino during an event Tuesday in Albany.
Is he going to bring sex predators and accused murderers into a congressional office where they interact with your family members and your neighbors who come looking for help? Is he going to send threatening messages to constituents who disagree with how he votes? Is he going to try to intimidate elderly veterans who speak their minds? These are not hypothetical questions. We have already seen the answers. We have seen them in writing. We have seen them in court documents. We have seen them on the internet for the world to read.
Smullen shared a text message he received from Constantino in the days leading up to last week's debate. It reads in part, quote, "There was a point in time where I felt bad for you and wanted to be nice when you lose. But I have since learned that you are a truly evil person that I must protect America from," unquote. Reached by WAMC Tuesday, Constantino called Smullen's latest attacks recycled and debunked. The Sticker Mule CEO has called Smullen, a retired Marine Corps colonel, names like Slime Bob, Swampling, and a Rhino, short for Republican in name only. The race has become enigmatic of the national debate in Republican politics. Smullin, who has represented the 118th New York State Assembly District since 2019, has received the support of the New York Republican State Committee and a majority of the county GOP committees in the sprawling 21st Congressional District. Constantino has received an endorsement from President Donald Trump. Constantino has flattered the president with a musical album, a bronze sculpture of the 45th and 47th president, and a massive sign atop his Amsterdam businesses asking residents to vote for Trump. Smullin has accused Constantino and Sticker Mule of profiting off of anti-police and anti-Semitic stickers. At last week's debate, hosted by WRGB-CBS-6, Constantino responded to Smullin's accusations.
We let people sell things on Sticker Mule. People have uploaded over close to 200,000 designs. They can upload anything they want. We're going to implement AI soon to block things that go against our guidelines. But if you see something that goes against our guidelines, you just have to click report listing. Instead of clicking report listing, he promotes it. He uses his own campaign funds to promote horrible stickers that I want nothing to do with.
At a campaign event last month, Constantino announced he was filing two complaints linked to alleged misuse and incomplete disclosure of campaign funds. As the Republican primary approaches, Smullin maintains he's the man for the job.
I will be on the ballot in November. I will win the Republican primary on June 23rd.
As Smullin touts his endorsements, Constantino recently criticized his opponent for his endorsement from New York's largest teachers union, New York State United Teachers, in 2024. In Saratoga Springs, I'm Aaron Shello Levine for the New York Public News Network.
And thank you to the New York Public News Network for those reports. All this week here on the Local Edition, we're breaking down the New York State budget. It passed just last week after the longest delay of any budget in the past decade. But tomorrow we'll be looking at how it impacts housing, one of the biggest issues facing the state. But tonight we're talking about climate, specifically the major rewrite that New York's landmark climate change law is getting because of this state budget. The Climate Leadership and Community Protection Act, CLCP, of 2019 set some of the most ambitious climate targets in the country. But this year's state budget changes some of the law's biggest pieces, including its timeline for emissions regulations, its 2030 target, and the way that New York counts its emissions. Supporters of the changes say the state needed a more realistic and affordable path forward. Critics say this is a major rollback of New York's climate commitments. Radio Catskills' Patricio Rubio spoke to New York Focus reporters Amdalat Ajasa and Nick Garber, who have been covering the budget deal and what it means for climate policy in New York.
The Climate Leadership and Community Protection Act, also known as the CLCPA, was one of the country's most aggressive state-led climate pushes to eliminate nearly all of New York's greenhouse gas emissions by 2050. The law set incremental deadlines to make sure that the state was on track to meet that 2050 goal.
The budget changes have some of the, you know, the biggest pieces, including some of the timeline changes for emissions. What is the target date for all of that?
Yeah, so the new law still keeps the 2050 mandate, but you know, legislators and climate advocates said that the changes kind of gut some of the components that made the law so aggressive. So Governor Hochul extended some key deadlines for the state to issue regulations on how they will reduce emissions and created a new interim target for when emissions need to be cut. They effectively got rid of the 2030 deadline and replaced it with the 2041. They also changed how emissions were counted and weakened accountability language, binding them to those deadlines leading up to the 2050 mandate.
Yeah. And now, Nick, you know, what role the budget was delayed for a very long time? What role do you think the delayed state budget had in getting the deal done, this particular deal done?
Yeah, I mean, there's no question that the later the budget goes, the more the governor's leverage increases, in no small part because legislators don't get paid during the, you know, once the budget is late, so there's more pressure for them to get to a deal. So I think it's pretty clear that as her tenure has gone on, Governor Hochul has really made increasing use of this sort of late budget tactic to push her own policy priorities. It was pretty glaring with the CLCPA in particular, which was not something that she even included in her initial budget proposal. There were just sort of whispers that she might want to do something. And then it was only in the middle of negotiations that she sprang the idea on the legislature. And even then, the text wasn't, you know, visible to the public. It was entirely behind closed doors. And it wasn't until the very end that the public got, you know, any look at the text of what was actually changing in the law.
Nick, what do you think this sort of budget fight tells us about sort of the balance of power between the governor and legislature?
Yeah, I mean, it was successful on Hochul's part. She wanted these changes to the CLCPA. She wanted these big reforms to auto insurance. She wanted to change the state's Environmental Quality Review Act, CEQA, to reduce barriers for building housing, which met a little resistance in the legislature, not as much as the other two. But she basically got most of what she wanted. And so I think, you know, if you're Governor Hochul, you have every reason to continue using this tactic in over the next few years of delaying the budget in order to push your own priorities.
As far as I know from the article, it said one major change is delaying the emissions regulations until the end of 2028. Why does that matter?
It matters because the reason that we're in this situation is because Hochul's administration failed to meet the 2024 deadline that was originally put in the 2019 CLCPA. And that is now more than two years late. The new law gives the state another 2 years to figure out exactly how they're going to meet the deadline for emissions regulations. And it still leaves lingering questions about how they will reduce emissions for the state to meet the 2050 deadline.
Right. And isn't the state changing how emissions are counted, right? They're moving from a 20-year method to like a 100-year method?
Yeah, they changed how they're counting emissions. And experts have said that the move could undercut how potent greenhouse gases like methane are counted. Experts say the move to change how emissions are counted from 20 years to 100 years will undercut how certain potent greenhouse gases like methane are counted. Gases like methane have shorter atmospheric shelf lives, which means that they might not be, they might be undercounted.
What has been sort of the reaction from environmental groups? Have they been responding to this?
Yeah, environmental groups, legislators, they've all said that this is a complete gutting of one of the most ambitious climate laws, not only for the state, but for the country. Assembly member Anna Keels had admitted to me that legislators fought hard against the rollbacks. And that she was proud of how legislators fought, but as Nick stated, the imbalance of power meant that there wouldn't be a budget had legislators not conceded.
Nick, for you, I just want to ask, you know, are there any sort of business groups responding to these changes also?
I believe the Business Council of New York State was generally in support of the governor's rollbacks. I didn't report on this closely, but right. My understanding is that big business was largely on the side of loosening the rules and delaying some of the deadlines.
Are there any other climate or energy items in the budget that did move forward?
Yeah, there were several. One of them, it's almost not exactly a climate item per se, but it was branded as one. There are these utility rebate checks that the Assembly pushed for and got enacted in the final budget, which will basically just have the state cut $1 billion worth of checks to households all around the state, ostensibly as a way to, you know, help cover rising utility bills. Although, I mean, they could have called it something else. That, you know, a couple of years ago, it was the inflation rebates. Mm-hmm. This is just something that the state has shown increasing sort of interest in doing, even though budget watchdogs largely think these are terrible ideas because they're sort of they don't differentiate between need. They just kind of take money out of the state's coffers that could have been used for other programs that are more targeted and just sort of throw money at people. But of course, you know, most voters won't complain about that. And in addition to that, there were all sorts of various, there were reforms to how rate hikes work, to the way utilities can, you know, propose raising rates, which the governor wanted in order to improve transparency. There's $200 million for something called Empower Plus, which covers home efficiency upgrades for certain households. There was $1 billion in sort of general climate and environmental funding. So there were quite a number of environmental items in the budget.
Yeah. Well, one question I have for Amdulat, with these rollbacks, what does this could mean for communities already dealing with, you know, pollution and climate impacts?
Sources had told me that the rollbacks mean that New Yorkers, especially those who are disproportionately impacted by pollution, will continue to foot the bill for this pollution with their health, with their wallets. I mean, they see this as a substantial impact for New Yorkers across the state, but especially those who are already disproportionately impacted.
Are lawmakers going to sort of revisit again this in the future, in a future session, do you know?
Yeah, I don't know. They hadn't really mentioned that to me, so I don't know if that's a question that I could speak on with confidence. But I know that, you know, Nick and I had reported, as well as one of our colleagues, Sam, about the fact that legislators just in general weren't happy with how this budget session has gone and have grown increasingly frustrated with Governor Hochul's tactics of delaying and basically strong arming her policy and fiscal plans. So there has been some, you know, lingering questions about how legislators will deal with this to try to combat some of the power imbalance that they're facing.
Now, Nick, on that, how much do you think that this fight was about policy, and how much do you think was about just politics? Because to me, it almost sounds like her tactics is more about politics than policy.
Yeah, well, it's hard to ever separate the two. I mean, I think it's clear that the governor has been very explicit that her motivation in trying to roll back parts of this law was to prevent what she saw as unconscionable cost increases for New Yorkers in terms of their utility bills, that her argument was that mandating this shift to clean energy would have forced utilities to raise prices on ratepayers, which I think a lot of environmental advocates disputed aspects of that claim. But I think there's no question that, you know, running for re-election, the entire political world focused on affordability, that, you know, the governor had political motivations here. I don't think she would necessarily deny that.
Is there anything else that we have not touched on? Do you want folks to know about this article?
One of the last things is, you know, legislators and climate advocates were really disappointed by the language that essentially defangs any accountability needed from the state up until the 2050 mandate. I mean, even with the 2040 mandate, which, you know, the interim 2040 mandate for them to reduce emissions by 60% of 1990 levels, kind of comes with the caveat of to the maximum extent feasible and cost effective. So there really is kind of just this lack of enforcement / accountability on the state's parts leading up until the 2050 mandate that some said could be problematic down the line.
That was New York Focus reporters Amdulat and Nick speaking with us about the changes to New York's landmark climate law into the final state budget. Their reporting looks at how this budget delays emissions and regulations, changes the state's climate timeline, and raises new questions about affordability, accountability, and the future of New York's clean energy goals. In Liberty, I'm Patricio Robayo for Radio Catskill.
Thank you, Patricio. We'll be hearing from Patricio again in just a moment as he talks to artist Mike Osterhout about what's coming up at next weekend's 40th anniversary event at the Church of the Little Green Man. Stay with us.
You're listening to The Local Edition, winner of Excellence in Broadcasting Awards from the New York State Broadcasters Association. Radio Catskill. Listen local.
You know, there'll be potentially a reckoning for SpaceX and for Elon Musk. It's going to have quarterly earnings calls with investors, and it's going to need to show progress towards these very lofty goals that people have already invested in. And if the company and Elon Musk doesn't show that progress, investors may start to get antsy.
I'm Michael Barbaro. That's Today on The Daily from The New York Times.
It's The Local Edition. I'm Jason Dole. A unique Sullivan County landmark is meeting a major milestone. The Church of the Little Green Man in Glen Wild is celebrating its 40th anniversary with a get-together next Saturday, June 13th. The church is a creation of artist Mike Osterhout, whose work blends performance, music, humor, local history, and a little bit of mystery. Radio Catskill's Patricio Robayo spoke to Mike about this anniversary, the story behind the church, and what this place has meant to him and to the community over the past four decades.
Well, the Church of Little Green Man is an ongoing performance art project that we started back in 1986 on the Lower East Side, the East Village, and as a gathering of kind of like-minded musicians and artists and what have you, all working and living in the East Village at the time. And we used the structure of kind of a Christian church service. We appropriate that as our basic structure and go from there. You burn a dollar to get in, and so that kind of sets the tone. And we've been doing it on and off for, you know, these 40 years. So,
yeah,
you know, we're doing it up here and have been doing it in Glenwild since I guess 2010.
Now, when you started this performance piece 40 years ago, did you ever imagine that it would still be going, you know, four decades later, still going on?
Absolutely not. No. I never thought that, you know, of all the projects I've done over the years, that this one would be the one that, you know, would actually take the least amount of effort to sustain itself. So it just kind of took a life, you know, took on a life of its own. And, you know, here we are 40 years later. It's still working, you know, in quotes, and everybody seems to be on board in the congregation, and also the band, which is the Band of All Faiths, up here.
Yeah. So let's talk about, you mentioned the band. What can people expect at this 40th anniversary get together on Saturday, June 13th?
I'm sorry, could you repeat that? I didn't quite get it.
What can people expect for the 40th anniversary get together?
Well, this one is a Latin theme. So, with everything that's been going on in our government and the horrors of immigration, you know, policies and ICE and things like that, we thought we'd you know, reach out to all our Latin brothers and sisters south of the border, and that's kind of the overall theme of it. Also, a heal thyself theme, and then one addition is we're very sad that one of our congregants and the consummate scapegoat, Dave Raven, died recently. So there's going to be a nice memorial for Dave as part of the service.
Right, right. Well, sorry to hear that. Now, you know, you mentioned, you know, this started 40 years ago. You know, has the meaning, or has, I'm assuming it has, the project has evolved over the years, and how has it evolved over the years?
Well, it's pretty much stayed. It has, well, it's evolved with personalities, and I guess the big change from when we started it. So, like I said, we started in '86. So, I don't know how old I was, I guess 34 or so, you know, so we were all relatively young at that point. Nobody had kids, and it was very much an adult venue. It still is an adult venue, but up here in the Catskills, there's a lot more young families with kids, couples. And that's been the biggest change, that kids are on board. And I always leave that up to the parents, whether they want to bring their children or not, because, you know, the themes are adult. A lot of the language is adult. But kids love to watch adults make fools of themselves. Mm. And that's what we do at church. You know, we basically make fools of ourselves and the world we find ourselves in. So it's quite cathartic, and kids respond, you know, positively.
Obviously, it's a different audience from the city and from up here. Have you noticed that sort of the vibe changed when you moved up here from when you created it down in the city?
Well, when I first moved, I moved up here in '95, so it took literally 15 years to start church up again. You know, I bought the church and my house next door, and I was working in the city as a restoration carpenter and working at home fixing these structures up. So it took a good amount of time to get back to the actual church services. So when that started in 2010, you know, everything, the world had changed. You know, 9/11 had happened. You know, I mean, 15 years. So there's a lot of change within those years. But what I initially thought that the church would be people coming out of the city, my community coming out of the city. But when you're gone for 15 years, you don't have much of a community in the city anymore. And thankfully, a lot of my close friends ended up moving up here and being kind of the core of the congregation. And then a community over those 15 years just kind of naturally developed here in the Catskills. So when I first came up, it was, you know, tumble down bungalows and abandoned farms, and all of that has changed. So the crowd now is basically local. But it has a city edge to it. There's a lot of transplants. So it's changed in many ways, and in many ways it's stayed the same.
Well, let me ask you this. When the anniversary gala is over, and they walk out of the church, what do you hope they walk away with?
I hope they walk away with a lot of joy. You know, that's what we try to. Well, we don't even have to try, really. You know, because like I say, it's taken on a life of its own. So when we're singing off-color hymns and people are singing and dancing and the kids are running around, I look out to the congregation and it's all smiles. So afterwards, after church, it's a, you know, bring your own drinks, bring your own whatever, and then we have a big barbecue and party on into the evening. I think we're going to have a DJ. Lonnie is probably going to DJ after church. Cat Silk, and you know, we just keep the party going.
Right. Yeah. I said the party is happening on June 13th, Saturday, at 6 p.m. at the Church of the Little Green Man in Glenwild.
One little change on that. We're going to start a little earlier at 5 p.m.
At 5 p.m.
So,
okay.
At 5 p.m. So that's the only change. But yes, June 13th, 5 p.m., 145 Old Glenwild Road in Glenwild. We got a Google pin in case anybody, you know, just wants to Google it. Very easy to find.
Right. Is there like a website or Facebook that people can go to just in case, you know, they want to see what happens at the Church of Little Green Man?
I don't have a website or a Facebook page, or I have an Instagram that's oldshule1. Where I usually put up, you know, some notices. And I think somebody out there does have a Church of the Little Green Man site. It's not mine, but, you know, it's easy. If you just Google Church of the Little Green Man or go on Instagram to oldshule1, you can find out.
Yeah, and I do see that there are some videos out there on Google. Sermons or gatherings that have happened in the past.
There's some information. There's a little documentary out there. Roderick Engel did a little documentary a few years back, Church of Little Green Man, and so you can get an idea of what you're gonna experience.
Yeah, Mike. Before we go, is there anything else we have not touched on you want folks to know?
I don't think so. You know, I'm. You know, we're keeping our fingers crossed on the weather, and we're going to have a great service. Bienvenidos todos, and you know, we're going to just bring a dollar to burn. You know,
yeah,
that's the one thing you have to remember.
It's your ticket to ride, I guess. Burn that dollar. So we were talking to artist Mark Osterholt, talking about the 40th anniversary of the Church of the Little Green Man in Glenwild. Anniversary get-together takes place Saturday, June 13th at 5 p.m. So for more information, you could Google Church of Little Green Man in Glenwild World, so you can see some of the photos and videos that have come out of this performance art piece in the past. So again, Mike, thank you so much for this. Do really appreciate it.
Thank you, Patricio. Appreciate that.
In Liberty, I'm Patricio Robayo. For Radio Catskill.
Thank you, Patricio, for that interview. Thank you, listener, for being here with me. I'm Jason Dole. I'll be back again tomorrow night. We'll do it all over again on the Local Edition. Mr. Kusar Grace is coming up at 7 with 2 hours of great music on the Music Emporium, followed by Ambient Barn coming up at 9. We do have more news on the way directly from The Daily. This is Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR.
Support comes from Sullivan 180, building healthy communities through people, places, and policy, one degree at a time. More information at sullivan180.org, and from listeners like you who donate at wjffradio.org.
Hey, this is Matt Hurtado. Join me for Virtual Soundscapes, your gateway to the best music in gaming. Classic tracks from the 8-bit era, modern releases, and interviews with the minds behind the games. Wednesday night at 9 on Radio Catskill.
WJFF Jeffersonville. You're listening to Radio Catskill.